Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It's Wednesday, and so JR Wednesday begins once again. JR Jackson, how's it going?
What's going on? Oddly, I'm in a good mood, and I'm not sure why. Because I feel like as this show goes on, and we're gonna find that I'm not in a good mood anymore. But you know, it's good to be started the right way. You know.
I mean, I'm not making you talk about Joe Manchin or anything. Like, I'm trying to give you a slightly better day. I did it on the pre-show.
I have thoughts about Joe Manchin. I almost wish you to save that for me. But yes, happy Wednesday, everyone.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. As I mentioned on the pre-show, hold on to your butts because I don't know what's going to come today. The first Wednesday of the year was the Capitol assault. The second one was the second impeachment of Donald Trump. The third one was the inauguration of Joe Biden. The fourth one was the GameStonk thing. And now maybe Marjorie Greene getting booted. We'll see. We'll see. I don't want to get my hopes up. Few of these Wednesdays have been awesome, but we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, if you're watching on Twitch right now, then you're not, because we're not streaming on Twitch right now. There's some sort of tech problem, so apologies for that. You can still chat over at Twitch, but we're live for the members and also for YouTube. We'll get it fixed for tomorrow, I'm sure. So thank you everyone for being wherever you are as we work through this. And thank you all for watching. If you haven't already hit the like button, please do that. Share the stream so that people know we're live, especially because we were a few minutes late. That would be very helpful. And as we go through this hour of news, we're gonna be responding to your comments. I did want to let you know that we have two things today. If you weren't on the pre-show, one, if you're in the YouTube chat, we have a new emoji for you, and that is Ilhan Omar, who we're gonna be talking about actually a good bit, a little bit later on. So she's now live in those. And we also have the return of Meanwhile In, our segment rounding up some international news that we haven't done since before the pandemic. A lot of the audience probably has no idea what I'm talking about because they started watching during the pandemic, but I hope that you enjoy it. It's been a long time coming for its return. And with that, JR, you ready to do this thing?
Oh man, I'm ready.
Okay, let's get into it. We've been wondering, is anything going to happen about Marjorie Greene? What conspiracy theory is it gonna take for the GOP to actually pretend that they care about this? Well, something kind of might be being done. Here is a reporter talking about conversation that Kevin McCarthy had with Marjorie Greene and how she responded and what their plan going forward is.
McCarthy and Greene sat down and McCarthy tried to lay out, from my understanding, that this was coming to a head and that her controversial comments from, you know, years past, months past, were putting Republicans in a really bad spot and they were frankly sick of it. He tried to lay out options for her, my understanding is, to say you can go on TV, you can apologize for your remarks, you can denounce QAnon, this conspiracy theory that in part led to some of the violence we saw on January 6th. And if you don't, you know, you could see GOP colleagues remove you. And my understanding is this didn't perhaps go as well as he wanted. There was some hope with Republicans that she would do the graceful thing and remove herself without making them act. So McCarthy called a late night meeting last night with his top lieutenants, basically the ones who choose committee assignments. And they talked about this. And my understanding is the consensus in the room from my reporting is that everyone agreed she's probably gonna have to come off education and labor. There was a question about whether they could go to Steny Hoyer, the Democratic leader in the House, and make some sort of deal to keep him from having a floor vote on this issue. The big thrust of the meeting, or the feeling in the room, was that a floor vote and forcing Republicans to take a vote, a yes or a no, in terms of removing a colleague would be catastrophic on the campaign trail. They would either get hit from the base, or if they were in a swing district, they could, you know, be labeled as somebody protecting a QAnon conspiracy theorist.
Okay, so that's the leadership. JR, what do you think about Kevin McCarthy's plan and about the conversation he had with Marjorie Greene?
I can't stand Kevin McCarthy, but this is the best thing as far as what he can do to protect himself, his party, and their minority in the House right now. To maybe hope that she would do a normal thing, like spare us all of the drama, spare us having to go through continuing to have to defend you, because we will. And also spare us the embarrassment of having to keep hearing all these things that you've done and said in the past that everyone is getting on us about. And if we can clear all this up, you can, obviously you're remaining in the House, nobody's gonna expel her. So you at least have to just step aside and we continue to do our obstructions that we're planning to do for this entire term for Biden's administration. Just let us be annoying. Stop being extra annoying so that we can't be annoying. And that's the best thing he can pull off right now. But the problem is you have someone who thrives off of being extra annoying and wants to disrupt everything and destroy everything in her path like a Tasmanian devil. So that's who she is. You're dealing with the Tasmanian devil. So Kevin McCarthy, you can go up to the Tasmanian devil all you want and say, hey, here's what we need to do, Tasmanian devil. Stop spinning, sit down and have a dinner. Bugs Bunny, you're never gonna catch him. And he'll go blah, 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 blah. And that's what the Tasmanian devil does. You can't stop him. That's what he does. That's what Marjorie Taylor Greene does. That's all he can deal with. So sorry, this is what you guys have created by supporting a president who acts just like this woman acts. That's who you've got now. Now you have someone that's not powerful who acts like Donald Trump, who was powerful. What are you gonna do?
I don't want to distract from the very good point that you made, but that was an amazing Tasmanian devil you just did right
Was
there.
It really?
Much of our audience probably doesn't know what that is, but that was very accurate. Those are some professional quality sound effects there. And Tasmanian devil emote coming soon. Anyway, I think you're right. Look, I think in theory he could say, we are facing a crossroads for our party. What do we want our party to be? Do we want it to be the party of anti-science, anti-education, making light of conspiracy theories? Or do we want all of that and Marjorie Taylor Greene on top of it? Because, you know, they were bad before. And he doesn't want to be a part of that choice. So he's fundamentally not a leader. A leader who actually cared about the Republican Party would want the Republican Party to not be the party of satanic sacrifice going forward. All he's worried about right now is, well, and by the way, it's really revealing that he gets where this is going, which is my bigger concern. He doesn't want a floor vote because then every one of his members needs to go on record as being for Marjorie Greene or against her. And that's bad, not right now really, but going forward. In theory, they could run against Marjorie Greene and the Republican Party protecting her. And the reason that's bad isn't just the stuff we found out. It's he knows that Tasmanian devil's gonna spin and they're gonna eat stuff and they're gonna break stuff. She is going to do increasingly insane things. And if his members vote to protect her and then we find out more and she does more and she says more, it is going to produce so much pain for the Republican caucus. And that's the only thing he's worried. That's the only amount of protection he's worried about providing for his party. He won't actually kick her out, which is the obvious answer for this.
It's what politicians do. It's you're supposed to act like you're doing something and then not really do it and then hope everyone gives you credit for doing something. And he's trying to work that balance, but this woman is a little bit too wild for him and continues to throw things out there and misinterpret, mischaracterize everything that's being said and done. So he's kind of having to fight within his own group before he even gets a chance to fight outside of it because he can't calm them down enough. And that's what this is the consequences for your actions for supporting a president that was like the previous one that just left office. So now deal with it. Take the stress. You thought you got rid of him, but no, you've created more of him.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like so much gets normalized. And I know that like every day new people get into politics and start following it actively. But I want to try to break through to some people and say, this isn't normal to protect her to this extent. And it's not normal that, well, no, of course you're never going to expel someone from your party. You're never gonna ask them to resign. Yes, in the past they would. Katie Hill resigned like 3.5 weeks ago because she engaged in an affair. That was it. She had an affair and she's gone now. Marjorie Greene thought a bullet to Nancy Pelosi's skull was more efficient than voting her out of office. Among space lasers and clones of RBG and all the shootings are fake. And like literally, I cannot remember all of the things that each individually would be disqualifying for an elected representative. This isn't normal to protect her. And it's not really even about her. Kevin McCarthy, by being such a coward in this area, is indicating that he gets that she is not a one-off. A one-off, you can kick out. He's worried about the next wave and the next wave, and that this might be the only Republican Party coming down the pike? Is more Marjorie Greens and more Madison Cawthorns and more Lauren Boberts, people who make the normal crazies of the past, the Steve Kings and the Louis Gohmerts, look sort of quaint by comparison?
Yeah, and by the way, this is a big illustration of what the Republican Party is becoming. And so they have to go with the crazy because they actually don't have any principles. If you had principles, you'd be like, okay, this is who we are, this is where we're going, and somehow this crazy wing of the party is trying to take over, and we can't allow that because our principles are A, B, and C. No, you go, this crazy wing of the party is taking over, so I guess our principles now have become D, E, and F. So you just switch it because that's what's politically helpful for you at the moment. That's not principles, that's not leading, that's not listening to your constituents.
Yeah. Now, Marjorie Greene has responded to the revelations from her meeting with Kevin McCarthy and how they're gonna maybe take her off of one of the committees, but they're gonna do it behind closed doors so that people don't have to vote. Here's what she had to say. No matter what GOP leader does, it would never be enough for the hate America Democrats. As much as he genuinely tries to work with Speaker Pelosi for the good of this country, she refuses to see the hypocrisy of her own conference. Filled with members who supported, cheered on, and funded criminal thugs who riot, burn, loot, attack police. Oh, you care about attacking police? Which police? Do you care about attacking police? Murder and occupy federal property. Well, she just certainly wouldn't want people going on federal property. She raided the Capitol, by the way, back in 2019. But anyway, members who sleep with our greatest enemy, and we're gonna return to that. Marry their brother to get him in our country. So she's in trouble for conspiracy theory. So she throws another theory in there. Lead a violent mob in neighborhoods and more. So she keeps talking about, I'm sick of it. Members who sleep with our greatest enemy. I assume based on her history, she's talking about people who sleep with Muslims. I could be wrong, but let's say that I am. What could you fill in that blank on where that isn't insane?
I have a guess.
What do you think?
My guess is Swalwell in the drama, and they said there's these Chinese spies that are coming in and making inroads with politicians here. I think that's that conspiracy theory.
You think, maybe.
But I don't know, who knows? Because you can throw anything at it because that's how conspiracy theorists work. Just say something, go, yeah, that's right, that craziness is happening. Let's throw the extra crazy. Yeah, she's talking about this guy. Yeah, that guy. It doesn't matter. It can spread to anyone. By plan. Make sure that we can implicate anyone in these conspiracies.
Yeah. Look, trying to work out her thought process is insane because she's insane, but like her defense is, oh, why would you throw me to the wolves? These are hate America Democrats. But like when you think about all of the things she believes, she thinks America is full of people who routinely fake the deaths of kids in school shootings and murder conservatives at a country music festival so that they can take away their guns, even though the guns never get taken away. She thinks that 9/11 was an inside job by the American government, which by the way was controlled by the Republicans when it happened. And she's now a part of the party that she thinks attacked America. None of this makes any sense. I get that she doesn't want to be thrown out of government. I wouldn't want to be thrown out of government. I wouldn't want to be thrown out of an Outback Steakhouse, but she's really worked at it. If you're humping the blooming onion, you gotta go. How can she be surprised by any of this? I don't know.
Well, she's not surprised.
Basically, is what this is about.
That's what we've come down from all this. No, I don't think she's surprised by it. This is again, when you're an insane person and people are trying to push back on you, and then you have to either be confronted with your insanity or push back further, and you're a stubborn a-hole, you're gonna push back further. She doesn't care. Who cares if you're getting thrown out? She's like, but I got that blooming onion. She doesn't care. That's by design. So then once she's thrown out, she can stand out front of Outback with a picket sign and say, don't go in there. They don't let you screw blooming onions. You know, it's as long as she's still getting attention, that's all that matters. And then one other thing about this. So Kevin McCarthy told her to apologize because his previous statements, we're not going to expel you. Hey, you can say that, hey, that was my previous youthful, exuberant days. All that is presented for her to do. And she turned it down. Now, in this tweet, she's talking about people sleeping with our greatest enemies, marrying your brother so they can come in the country. So if you want to disavow your previous conspiracy theorist statements, you can't then start new ones today. Because that doesn't match up. You can't say, in the past, I used to say this and that, but you know what? I'm a responsible member of Congress. I didn't mean all that stuff. If you're tweeting it today, you still mean it. That's just the way it is. You haven't changed. So this apology that Kevin McCarthy hopes that she'll give would be empty because she'd go back to saying it in real time.
Yeah. No, that's such a great point because, and I apologize, I glossed over the area where he had provided her an out, like, so that she wouldn't have to get kicked off anything. All she has to do is give a statement saying, I don't believe in QAnon. I don't want all the Democrats to be rounded up and executed in the great storm. I don't think that all of the shootings are faked, and she won't do that for one of a couple of potential reasons, either because she really does still believe that stuff, in which case, again, Bloomin' Onion, get out of here. Or she doesn't actually believe it, but like sort of in a Trumpy fashion, she would rather have everyone think she believes those things than admit that she doesn't, or admit that she had grown or that she was wrong or whatever. I don't care which of those it is, or maybe you can come up with some other solution or some other explanation. But either way, again, she's got to go. He provided her an out and she won't even do that. It's just a public statement. They didn't even give Katie Hill that option. And she just has to say, okay, I take it back. I don't want Nancy Pelosi to be shot, I guess. And I don't think that the Jews of Europe have a conspiracy to flood Europe with Muslims to destroy it from within. I don't actually believe those things anymore. That's another, we have never even covered that. That's the thing that she believes. Anyway, yeah, you're right. She was off now and she won't take it.
Can we bring up that tweet again where she's complaining about marrying siblings and all that stuff, whatever she said? Because then she quoted this political argument with a scoop of Brett about breaking news about things that are happening with the situation, with the meeting with McCarthy and all that. So there was a little excerpt point where it said that Democrats want nothing else. He's going to make a deal with Steny Hoyer, but Democrats are being too strict and stringent on it. So Democrats are being rigid, but she's not, first of all. So she took an excerpt from this political argument. So me being this normal human being went to the political article to see what else was there. Guess what else was there? Previous to the point where she started talking about how Kevin McCarthy is going to make deals with Steny Hoyer, there's this line that says, McCarthy tried to give green options. She could denounce QAnon and apologize publicly for espousing hurtful conspiracy theories, all that stuff that that the analyst said just now in the clip. So she purposely kept that part out of her tweet. And then after her tweet that ended this said, but that will never fly with Democrats. She underlined in red, Democrats are too rigid. The next sentence says, it's important to, in bold, it's important to note, the plans could all change if Green apologizes or removes herself. She didn't continue on with that line in her tweet. You know why? Not that she didn't read it, because that's not helpful for her BS argument. That's why. She knows, obviously, because she was there. This is all a veil to continue this insanity that she's trying to spin, that she thinks is really helpful for her. I don't know how.
Yeah. Today's big news, maybe. But we've got one other bit of this before we check in with the audience. Oh, by the way, someone asked for me to show the shirt. So this is on ShopTYT. I wrote the damn bill. Bernie Sanders, hopefully he'll be writing and passing a lot of bills in the next few years. Anyway, let's go to this last angle on this. According to Kevin McCarthy's meeting with Marjorie Greene, she might be removed from at least one of the committees that she serves on. And that would be progress. That would be rational. That's completely unacceptable to the Republicans because now they're trying to come up with a both sidesism beyond anything I think I've seen. Okay, maybe we will remove her, but not just her. You have to give one too. And conveniently, what do you know? It's Representative Ilhan Omar. House Republicans, including former Trump doctor Representative Ronnie Jackson, drafted an amendment to a bill to remove Marjorie Taylor Greene from her committees and to remove Representative Ilhan Omar from her committees too. And it's not just a couple of kooks in the elected section of the Republican Party, it's also on right-wing media. So here is Bill Hemmer from earlier today.
Let's be clear.
But what she's doing is of a whole different kettle of fish.
One might be weird and kooky, Josh. The other is seen as racist.
Yeah.
The guy's like, so first of all, Bill Hemmer, you get that Green's racist too. Like, that's not new. We're going to expound on it in this section, but that's not new. and JR. Weird and kooky, meaning I want Nancy Pelosi to be killed. I think the Jewish space lasers start fires. Like, that's weird and kooky.
There's always these softening tones that conservative media uses when they're talking about a Republican that does something insane, like talk about wanting to kill Nancy Pelosi, or a bullet to the head is awesome for her. When Trump would say insane, insightful things, they would go, I wish he'd change his tone. I mean, he's a little bit exuberant at times. You know, maybe he gets a little excited. You know, use these terms like there's a 50% positivity to the things that they said. You know, they just got a little above themselves, got a little bit caught up in the moment. You know, they use those types of terms to say like, yeah, it was wrong, but it wasn't that bad. It was only 10% bad. That's what he's saying here, because we need to soften that tone, but then call the other one racist, literally racist. And then, I guess the guest didn't have the example right on hand as you will right now. Like, because my thought, right when they said that, I said, who's racist? Because I was like, I didn't know Bill Hemmer's making the argument against Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, there's so much. How could he not know any of this? Really fast though, I want to make sure that this isn't just the kooks that are elected. This isn't just the kooks on Fox News. Marjorie Greene herself is getting in on this because she tweeted this. Keep it up, MAGA country. We've reached 95,000. Let's get to 100,000 to help me defend my seat from the DC swamp. And you can see that in that picture behind it is Representative Ilhan Omar. Why? Is she in House leadership? No. But you know why. You know why she's always focused on Ilhan Omar randomly out of everyone in Congress. And she gets it too. Ilhan Omar tweeted, I will be honest and say it's getting really scary to serve with people with guns who dehumanize and target you. I fear that with no accountability, no recourse, and calls to move on will turn this toxic environment into a deadly situation. And she should be. This is a woman who is like frothing at the mouth in hatred for Muslims and has been for as long as she has been making content and putting it on the internet. And she believes that carrying a gun is the most important thing that has ever existed. So you put, and she has said that her political opponents can be shot in the head and that's a quick, efficient way to get them out of office. So yeah, I would be terrified if I was Ilhan Omar to be serving with this maniac. But really fast, I do want to make sure, just in case Bill Hemmer's watching this, you need to know that Marjorie Taylor Greene isn't just crazy. She is also incredibly racist and Islamophobic and anti-Semitic. There's so much that we're not gonna delve into here about how Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group and how if black people are being held back, guess what? Slavery is gone. It's laziness, which is the most like stereotypical racist thing that you could possibly say. Or that black people join gangs and that's what's keeping them back, not white supremacy. Yep. And a million other things than that. And the thing about European Jews bringing Muslims in to destroy the continent from inside.
Jewish lasers.
Lasers. No word on why they're not using the lasers in Europe. We don't know yet. But she also suggested that the 2018 midterms, which ushered in the most diverse class of House freshmen, was part of, quote, an Islamic invasion of our government. And that, quote, anyone that is a Muslim that believes in Sharia law does not believe in our government. Because she can't conceive of someone who is a practicing Muslim that does not believe in Sharia law or its application inside the United States. She thinks that every single one does. She continues to say, you saw after midterm elections that we saw so many Muslims elected. I don't know the exact number, but there were quite a few. She said Muslims are not being held back in any way because the Constitution guarantees equality. But what you people want, you people, is special treatment. You want to rise above us, and that's what we're against. She literally tried to stop them from being sworn in. She stormed the Capitol to try to stop them from being sworn in, but equal treatment. Even though she didn't even read the Constitution and know that Bible, Quran, you can swear on it whatever you want. You could do it on Where's Waldo if you can find it. But anyway, she says, if you want Islam and Sharia law, you stay over there in the Middle East. She's an American citizen and has been for many, many years. You stay over there in the Middle East. You stay there and you go to Mecca and do all your thing. And you know what? You can have a whole bunch of wives or goats or sheep or whatever you want. You stay over there. But in America, see, we've made it this great, great country. We don't want it messed up. Because immigrants coming in with their wives and their goats and their sheep and their Mecca mess up the nice country we made. Bill Hemmer, are you paying attention to the words of the now Congresswoman? We've got more, but I've been going on for a while. JR, I want to give you a
chance. No, it's fine. I'm kind of over her, but it's pretty obvious. The approach here, especially when it comes to the Fox News folks there, you know, I think they're losing some viewership to the OANs and the Newsmaxes of the world because Trump's campaign against them worked to a certain degree. And so, you know, you have to sprinkle in enough of the crazy or support of the crazy in order to try to retain the audience that has become a large portion of the Republican voting base. Every time Trump talks about the millions and millions of people that voted for him, yeah, Fox News listens and they're like, okay, so we got to start supporting these crazies or else we're out too. This is all just capitalism. They can continue to make their money rather than actually report the truth or even discuss it in a truthful manner. It doesn't matter. They just have to follow through with what she's doing. And she knows that too. So she's like, you know, we have this we have this approach and this push now to make crazy as a defining issue of the Republican Party. And that's all they got now. It's
a moneymaker.
And you know what?
I'm sure she's raising tons of money.
Oh, absolutely. And so anyone that's upset that people will still talk about Marjorie Greene because she's a nobody, she incites other nobodies to do things like what happened at the Capitol. So yeah, I would love to ignore her, but there's people who are dangerous that aren't ignoring her. So that's where this comes together. Totally. It's not because I love talking about her and I love her face.
Yeah. And we could, I mean, there is so much we could read here. If you want to demonstrate how racist she is, there was one candidate. There was like an open seat or whatever, or like one side of an open seat, and the only candidate that had registered to run was a Muslim. And she said, and I'm somewhat paraphrasing, but the last quote is a quote that we have to get someone against him because, I mean, his last name is Muhammad. His last name doesn't get to be Muhammad and serve in government. It is clear to her that if your name is a name, I believe literally the most common name in the entire world, you don't get to serve in government. That's who she is.
I'm going to join the Republican Party because I'm tired of this cancel culture from the, I'm confused.
I'm confused. Well, she certainly is.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
There are people who are coming out of the Trump administration not so well off, having trouble getting jobs and things like that. But what do you know? That crazy couple, Jared and Ivanka, managed to land on their feet and score hundreds of millions of dollars along the way. So here's what we can learn from their final financial disclosure forms. Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner reported as much as $120 million in income for 2020. That's more than a 20% drop from what they reported a year earlier. In 2017, shortly after joining White House staff, they reported income as much as $195 million, but that's over a longer period of time than the ones that follow, so it's not directly comparable. In their most recent disclosure, they list assets worth between $206 and $803 million. That is slightly down on the low end, up on the high end from 2017. Jesus. And look, there's more, but It is so frustrating because these are two people that have had 4 years in the public eye to fix problems, assist the president, aid in important topics of both domestic and international policy. At no point during any of that did either of them demonstrate a single monetizable skill. And yet, while that was what they were doing, solving the crisis in the Middle East and all that, slash whatever, they were pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars. That is incredibly frustrating.
It's a pretty good gig they got there going.
Get it.
We're seeing more and more of the reasons why they want to make sure that Trump wasn't voted out or even left after losing to make sure this money making could happen. Again, I do remember in 2015, definitely 2016, before November elections, people were talking about how this president and his family is looking to enrich themselves off of the presidency, off the position, off the power and influence at the expense of America. Because in order to do that, you maybe make some deals with certain people, maybe you make some deals with other countries, maybe you make deals with other leaders to make sure that you can profit off of the office, which is not supposed to happen because that will hurt, help them and hurt everyone else. Look at us 4 years later, hurting off of what they did and the help that they've gotten as they waltz off to Florida to maybe plan a Senate run against Marco Rubio. That's the next step. It's like, this is the best cash cow we've had in a long time from doing absolutely nothing. Like, we only have to lie to a bunch of people who believe us all the time. This is easy. So this is, you know, this is an easy grift for the next hundreds and hundreds of million dollars that they look to make.
Yeah. And
it's not like we didn't warn you.
No, totally, totally. And we tracked a lot of this along the way, you know, stuff going on with Jared Kushner and the Emirates and about the really expensive building he owns and all that. You know, his dad was pardoned by the president. That's nice for them. You know, it's just, it's good. It's good to see good news happen to such terrible people. But it's not just that. You know what the right wing's mad about this week? And this is literally true. You can find it. Hunter Biden had a lawyer. That lawyer knew a different lawyer. That different lawyer got some sort of government job. That's literally a scandal. That's the Hunter Biden scandal. They made hundreds of millions. And let's say, okay, well, they're like nepotism. That's a problem now. The fact that they were there that whole time pulling in so much money was not an issue. But then also, like, William Barr, one of his kids got a government position. Someone related to Rudy Giuliani got a position. Like, it wasn't just Trump's own family. Everyone was cashing in and positions that they had no actual. Absolutely. There was some guy who was involved in some sort of White House sports promotional thing, had no experience in anything having to do with any of that, but he was related to one of the individuals in the administration. So, like, the idea that now they care about nepotism is insane.
It checks though. It's the way they've always been. Anytime they, you know, they'll complain about government spending, the debt and the deficit, and then complain about Democrats or the party of the big spenders when it's consistently obvious that Republicans spend like crazy, give money to a bunch of rich folks and hope that they give money back because apparently it's all theirs to give money back to the rest of the American people, which they never do. But they'll continue to cite these phantom studies that show that trickle down economics work, but then they'll complain about the other side. And for some reason, we continue to believe them. So I have no faith that we're gonna see this and go, yeah, you know what, that whole nepotism thing kind of happened under the Trump administration, but isn't happening here. We'll hear every story that they say about any kind of nepotism from a friend of a former attorney's daughter's cousin and be like, oh my God, look at the connections. And we'll go, wow, did you guys see those connections? Can you believe the Biden administration is this corrupt? There's plenty of things that I'm sure we'll be able to focus on that the Biden administration will do wrong, because they will. And this is just to jump on this is the equivalent of the tan suits and the mustard on hot dogs that we had under Obama. We're back to that now. I don't understand it, and I'm not sure why we're listening to it. I think because enough people that are following them will.
Well, look, we occasionally have on Dave Leventhal. I know he's been watching some of the financial stuff. We will see. I know some people have hopes that some of the obvious corruption, financial crimes, tax fraud, all of that will eventually come back to bite them. I don't have a lot of hope in that area, but we'll see. That said, let's move again from the corrupt to back to the crazy. So.
Oh, yeah.
MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell is an expert Unfortunately, he's an expert on pillows. That's not what he's being brought on Newsmax to talk about. And they quickly discover that, hey, wait, maybe he's actually crazy.
So well, what happened? What happened with your Twitter account and the company page?
Well, first mine was taken down because we have all the election fraud with these Dominion machines. We have 100% proof. And then when they took it down about 3 weeks ago, when I put it back up, my personal,
thank you very much. Mike, you're talking about machines that we at Newsmax have not been able to verify any of those kinds of allegations. We just want to let people know that there's nothing substantive that we've seen. And let me read you something there. While there were some clear evidence of some cases of vote fraud and election irregularities, the election results in every state were certified, and Newsmax accepts the results as legal and final. The courts have also supported that view. So we wanted to talk to you about canceling culture, if you will. We don't want to relitigate the allegations that you're making, Mike, because we understand where you are. So let me ask you this. Do you think that this should be temporary? Because it appears to be permanent. Could you make an argument that it is temporary?
What?
Could you make an argument that this could be a temporary banning rather than permanent?
No, I want it to be a permanent because you know what? They did this because I'm revealing all the evidence on Friday of all the election fraud with these machines. So I'm sorry if you think it's not
Mike,
it's real.
Can I ask our producers, can we get out of here, please? I don't want to have to keep going over this. Newsmax have not been able to verify any of those allegations.
Mike, hold on a second. Everybody, hold on a second. Mike, hold on 1 second. Let's talk a little bit about just what is happening overall in terms of censorship of.
Cancel out my company and myself in this country. It's cancel culture.
But one of the two is the empty seat. That guy jumped out a window, actually. Most people don't know that. Wow. Okay, JR, so there's a lot there. First of all, I just want to say, we are just a YouTube thing or whatever. And I've even said many times over this pandemic that we are sort of falling apart mentally in terms of our production value. That said, we are 1,000 times more professional than Newsmax will ever be. That was insane. Well, anyway, what are your thoughts?
Partially because you know they have people like this on, so you know that automatically downgrades your professionalism from the beginning. So it doesn't really help them in that aspect. There's so many things. I mean, I'm trying to file them on. This is so awesome. I wish I had my popcorn again, like I sadly had before. So. Okay, you mentioned Dominion, you mentioned machines. That is a no-no. We saw this before. We talked about it, you know, months ago when every conservative outlet, including Fox News and Lou Dobbs, even one of the biggest minions for Trump, they all read their statements. We here at insert conservative news organization here disavow completely, don't support anything that says Dominion, because Dominion came forward and said, we got a couple $1 billion lawsuits against you guys if you'd like to continue this. And they said, yeah, I'd like to not continue that. But MyPillow decides to go on and be Mike Pillow. Mike. He should call him Mike Pillow. Because he's the only one that's left to buy that damn thing anyway. So you invite him on the show to talk about craziness and him being banned and cancel culture. Hey, you invite the crazy on, the crazy is gonna go crazy. Let's keep it real. I say it all the time, and I love this, my favorite thing from Chris Rock. The tiger, he's talking about how a tiger wouldn't attack someone. He said, everyone in the news said, the tiger went crazy, the tiger went crazy. He said, that tiger didn't go crazy, that tiger went tiger. So in this case, you invite Mike Lindell on your show. Mike Lindell pulled a Mike Lindell and did what he does. Hey, I hope if you want to keep reading your lawsuit statements that your attorneys put together to absolve you from everything he's going to say, stop inviting him on because now you're complicit. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, it's not even that, like they knew he'd go crazy. They wanted him to go crazy. They just wanted to aim the crazy at a particular thing. And this is like that. That was like a perfect example of what we've been talking about the right wing, about Tucker Carlson. It is, no, come on, don't do that. Talk about vague concepts, because vague concepts can't sue you. We brought you on to talk about cancel culture, which means whatever we want it to mean, changing every couple of minutes or so. Whatever happened to a conservative, that's cancel culture. It's bad. Talk about that. Why are they bringing on the pillow guy in the first place to talk about cancel culture or the election? He makes pillows and notably seems like a guy who hasn't gotten a wink of sleep since the election because he's tweaking out constantly. But anyway, my favorite honest, I love when the grifters are accidentally honest. He said, we don't want to relitigate this, which is true. They don't want to litigate any of this because that could be very expensive.
We only don't want to not relitigate this. We don't want to litigate this.
No litigation, please. You can see from our graphics package, we're barely hanging on here. But anyway, it's just, and that is, that's beating Fox in the ratings some nights in certain time slots. That was beating Sean Hannity throughout December. It's those two people who, God, they wish they could just be on Fox News, trying to get control of this Tasmanian devil, clutching a big pillow. Yeah, the whole thing was just insane.
By the way, and, just to bring this all around to another point, Mike Lindell went back on Newsmax later the same day, just to show you who they really are. So he went on Rob Smith's show and they didn't want to mention that. And they brought him on to talk some more. And he said the only reference he's going to have to this is that you were on earlier. We made some waves, but we're going to leave it at that. You and Newsmax have always had a very good relationship. So again, they went to Mike Lindell. This is my speculation because obviously I wasn't there. But from this line where he said, you and Newsmax have always had a good relationship. It's, hey, listen, we've been scratching your back by giving you exposure because apparently you're canceled. And you're giving us, you're scratching our back by feeding our idiots that are crazy and want to watch this stuff. We need to keep it narrow. Let's keep it broad. Don't go narrowing it down to this one Dominion voting machine. That's exactly gonna screw us up. That's gonna screw you up. So he's like, can you please play by the rules? What they can't do is, Mike, you can't come on anymore. They can't do that because that's against the business.
Because he's too popular amongst the crazies, yeah. Yeah, and they did like everything he was trying to do there, that's what they did for literally weeks until the threat of a lawsuit stopped them from doing it. And they still want, like they want to make money, they want to steal Fox's audience, and it's by being even crazier than Fox News. We've found their limit, and their limit is $1.3 billion or whatever. We just had an election in Georgia that went for Joe Biden. Then we had two Senate runoffs that went for the Democrats. That is bad news for the Republicans there. It might signal that it is time for them to seriously start to think about the candidates they're putting forward and the policies that they're supporting so they can win back some of the support that they've been hemorrhaging. Sorry, I think I had a stroke for a second. I was talking nonsense. No, they're just gonna make it harder for people to vote. That's what they're gonna do. That's what they've always done, and they're gonna keep doing it. Republican state senators introduced a package of bills this week to ban automatic voter registration, ballot drop boxes, no excuse absentee voting in Georgia, voting at all. The proposals amount to an overhaul of Georgia's election laws after record turnout resulted in wins for Democrats. Of course. So one of the bills would require an excuse to vote absentee, undoing a 2019 law allowing no excuse absentee voting. Again, this wasn't even just a pandemic thing. This is before that. Under the bill, voters would need to be 75 years or older, absent from their precinct, observing a religious holiday, pale as hell, have a physical disability, be required to provide constant care for someone with a physical disability, really like that comedian who does the puppets, or required to work for the protection of the health, life, or safety of the public during the entire time the polls are open to qualify to vote absentee. Why? Because they don't want people voting, that's it. And they're just really hoping that before the state government gets taken over, they make it as difficult as possible to actually vote.
This has been the calling card for conservative party, the Republican Party, since forever, or since people outside of white male landowners could vote. When women started voting, especially when minorities got a chance to vote, all these things are put into place to preserve what they previously had as much as possible. It's 2021 and we're still doing it. In 2013, the Voting Rights Act, at very strong aspects of it got voted down by the Supreme Court. Why? So that they could allow conservative states and conservative elected officials to continue to manipulate our voting systems to make sure they stay in power. Because they can't be voted in because of their ideas and their principles, because they have none of those. They're working for these rich people that have given them enough money, and they're using Fine, I'll say it. Poor racist people to be the one to uphold all these things that they call values, that they think they're, I'm sorry, and also Christians, to think that they're actually falling into those lines of those values that they had. None of those things are happening. But as soon as any one of these things happened, like in 2013, they immediately, within the day, start changing rules to suppress voters' right to get there. You've read like 18 different things that are on this parameter, and they have to be born between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. in order to be on this route and improve it every voting cycle. No, these are some of the most ridiculous guidelines to make sure that people don't vote. Paul Weyrich said like in 1979 or 80 that I don't want people to vote. He said it as Republicans to a Republican audience. The fewer people vote, the more we win. It just, it's the way it is. When Trump was trying to steal this election, he said, you know what, we have all these people voting, and next thing you know, we're never gonna win an election again if we have people voting. They say it openly and honestly, they're not lying. They're saying it straight up. We don't want Americans to vote. We don't like democracy. We don't like a representative government. We like a very limited representative government of the people who pay us enough money to continue to stay in office and do the things that we do to destroy the rest of your lives. That's our objective in this office. And once we leave, we go to help others that are doing it, continue to do it as lobbyists and any other way we can get involved. That's what they're about. They're not, at least they're not hiding it, but we just decide not to listen to them.
Yeah, it's incredibly clear. I hope that Georgia is gonna be able to fight back against this. I don't have any hope that the Supreme Court would overturn any of this. I mean, and it go like we've read a lot, but it goes farther than that. Let's see, they're banning ballot drop boxes, requiring voters to provide identification when they request an application for a ballot. Another one would limit who can distribute absentee ballot applications. Only Georgia election officials and campaigns. Outside groups, nonprofits can't do it. Why? Like it's, they're literally not involved with the application. It is just, here's a paper for you to then get it later yourself. You're not even with us, but they don't want it because it leads to more people voting. Other measures introduced by state Republican lawmakers would expand poll watcher access for voting intimidation, prohibit new Georgia residents from voting in runoffs. Why? Because we don't think they're gonna vote for us, that's it. And literally they just lost two runoffs and they're like, no, don't vote in the runoffs anymore. And mandate monthly updates to election officials of voters who have died. There's lots of polls. People don't actually support this, obviously. They don't support the party. They don't support their efforts to stop them from voting. It's just insane that it's so brazen. They lose a presidential election. They lose the runoffs and they're like, well, clearly we've got a problem here. It's people voting. And it's not just them, really fast. Here's a shot from MSNBC rounding up. Arizona is gonna be doing stuff about mail ballots and also allowing the legislature to overturn the result of an election. All that stuff, you know, that was going on for months where like, oh, it's inconvenient. They can't actually nullify the will of the voters. They're trying to change that so that they can. Pennsylvania is gonna be purging voter rolls more. Georgia is gonna be doing all sorts of stuff. So all these states where they lost, they're not gonna change their platform or even their campaigning style. They're just hoping they can eliminate a few hundred thousand voters. And then that's the solution to the problem. And they've always done this, they're doing this now. It is on the media to make clear that people know that this is happening. It's on the politicians in those states to try to fight back against it. And it's on all of us to deliver a Supreme Court that will actually protect the right to vote and not simply, you know, go an election cycle or two saying who cares what ends up happening in the Supreme Court. It does actually matter because a super majority in the Supreme Court for the Republicans is the exact sort of one that's gonna be okay with states like Arizona overturning results, Pennsylvania purging every black person in the entire state from ever voting, etc.
This is a big illustration. It highlights the importance of continuing to stay involved, continue to make sure you're voting, to continue to make sure you're paying attention to what's happening. Because I was saying it right after Biden got in office and actually when Trump finally decided to go ahead and leave, after his attempt to not leave. We have to make sure you continue to stay on because these guys are not gonna stop. It's not like they went, oh, well, looks like we lost. I guess we'll go ahead and start doing normal things now, like, you know, following the rule of law and making sure we don't try to upend democracy in a country. Let's not do that. Let's go ahead and make sure we continue to go that route. So on the other side, you can't get calm and complacent and be like, whew, got rid of Trump, now let's sit back. No, they're gonna continue to fight. People who don't want things to go well in this country will never tire. They got money and they've got people that are willing to pay them to continue to do this. They're on it immediately. So don't think that we're done. It's never gonna end. You have to continue to stay with this.
Yeah.
It's tiring.
Joe Biden becoming president didn't solve all of our problems. Oh, I was really hoping. No. yeah, the fight continues and the Republican Party is just gonna try to make it harder to vote, and they're gonna do everything they can to appeal to QAnon people. That is it. That's the future.
That's not the new playbook. Half of it is a new playbook, the QAnon part.
Yeah. The king is dead. Long live the king. New playbook, same as the old playbook. Anyway, okay, I know that we're a little bit over, but I want to make sure that we get to this. So let's transition right into this. Are we ready to go in terms of these videos? We're gonna have to be a little bit brief with this because we are over already. But Marissa, do I have a thumbs up to go? Okay, let's do this. And now it's time for the return of news from around the world. It's Meanwhile In. Meanwhile, in Israel, they are actually leading the world in vaccinating their population. But what about Palestine? Okay, that's an important question. Right now, you can see that Israel is actually, they've inoculated more than half of actual Israelis. The UAE is doing very well. The USA is down there somewhere. I don't even think that 9.4 is actually accurate, but the BBC is saying it is. Anyway, so but what about the Palestinians who are living under a military occupation as well as a blockade that makes it significantly harder to get basic medical supplies, let alone cutting edge, newly released and not cheap vaccines? Well, Israel has said that it's going to transfer 5,000 doses to the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza so the vaccinations can begin for frontline health workers there. So that's like they've already vaccinated more than half their population. They're talking about some of the frontline healthcare workers might soon get access to it. Now, the situation for Palestinians is really gonna depend on where you live. In occupied East Jerusalem, all Palestinians are entitled to be vaccinated against COVID by Israel. That's because Palestinians in East Jerusalem have Israeli residency status. So those living there pay Israeli taxes and have access to Israeli health insurance. And as of right now, to give you a scale, an idea of the scale of the problem, according to the WHO, there have been more than 178,000 confirmed coronavirus cases and more than 2,000 deaths among Palestinians in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza, with the case fatality rate being 1.1%. It's a proportion of reported infections which result in a person dying. In Israel, it's 0.7%. So if you get sick, where you live in that area very much could determine whether you survive it.
And you think they don't know this, you know? And also, by the way, this, and I don't know the geographical makeup or the divisions and barriers that are put up in the area, but when you don't provide vaccination or help for folks that live in a certain area just because you don't like them, it doesn't mean that the thing doesn't spread still. So it can still get to other aspects. It can still get to the people that you prefer to be safe and healthy. That can potentially, I don't know. I don't know what kind of divisions are put up. So maybe they do have something in place to make sure that the folks that they're underserving don't get anything. And also the people that they're serving are shielded from it. I don't know. Yeah. But if that's not the case, it's kind of not helpful to do this in the first place, even if you're being selfish.
Totally. Yeah. And I would say, you know, for the Americas as well. In any event, the Palestinian government says that they are going to be attempting to purchase enough vaccines to at least get up to maybe 20% vaccinated at some point. But it's not going to be easy. There's an international rush on this. It's expensive. It's difficult to get stuff in there. So it is very much going to have to be on Israel to make this available because of the current situation there. Right. And I want to give credit to one US politician that is trying to put pressure on Israel in this area. That is new Congressman Jamal Bowman, who tweeted, "Every single human being has the right to be protected from the global enemy of COVID-19. This week, he apparently wrote to the Israeli acting consul general about distributing the vaccine to Palestinians and is going to be meeting to talk more about it. And he goes on to say, "As a black man living in America, I know the feeling of being neglected by my government and society." And so—
How dare he?
Exactly. It makes me sick that he's focusing on this. But no, it's awesome leadership to care about, you know, people who are thousands of miles away and trying to make sure that they don't needlessly die. Anyway. Meanwhile, Lynn. Meanwhile, in India, internet shutdowns have continued in an attempt by the government to strike back against the months-long protest that's been going on of farmers who are fighting back against new regulations. This is something we talked about literally months ago. It is getting worse. Internet access remained blocked on Monday in several districts of a state bordering India's capital following violent weekend clashes between police and farmers protesting controversial agricultural reforms. In addition to that, Twitter blocked access to dozens of accounts in India on Monday, including some that belong to high-profile individuals, to comply with a legal demand. So that includes some outspoken actors and celebrities who had been talking about the protests, some organizers who had been dealing with those protesting. They had been blocked. Now, apparently Twitter has since then released some of these accounts, but it is interesting. I know that we're supposed to be focused on other parts of the world, but for some reason, Twitter blocking a bunch of these accounts didn't cause the US-based free speech warriors to suddenly get all worked up about it, because it's people who are actually advocating for those who are being devastated by their government, not just really powerful white men who want to monetize their audience. It's weird that they weren't worked up about this.
Yeah, where was the, I don't know, maybe the Twitter decision to be a part of this. Was it a Twitter decision, or was it like, you know, India blocked that access for many users?
Twitter, Twitter apparently got requests from the Indian government to block these accounts, and they complied with it. There was some outcry in the area, and so they have apparently reversed it. Although I'm not going to say that they've definitely restored all of the accounts, but that's apparently what happened.
Again, this is one of those situations, and I always say it, why the extra work you go through to make sure that you're hiding your misdeeds is so much harder than just fixing it, addressing it, doing something about it, even say, I will do something about it. So you go through this process in trouble of blocking well-known names and worldwide names accounts from saying things about the situation in your country, because that'll help, or will that possibly bring a little bit more focus on what you're doing and add another layer to your despicable behavior? Yeah. It doesn't really help. In fact, now you're fighting harder.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want information about what caused these protests, we do have past videos on the channel, but really fast, just a super simplified version of it. The government says that these new regulations will modernize farming by liberalizing the industry, but India's farmers say it will be their downfall. Under these new policies, farmers will have fewer government protections and will likely lose the government regulated markets and prices they've relied on for years. All of this is happening as India's farmers grapple with a shrinking share of the economy that has contributed to a suicide crisis around the country. So they have been engaged in this protest for literally months. The police have been getting increasingly rough. Now they're trying to sort of cut them off from mobile communications. So all of that is going on. Just bear in mind that that is out there. And meanwhile, Lynn. Meanwhile, in Myanmar, a woman's viral fitness video apparently accidentally and coincidentally captured the very beginning of the coup. And here it is. Okay, that is objectively awesome. But what you're seeing behind her is a barricade and eventually an armed military convoy that was apparently headed to the government buildings right there. Now, her name is King Ninwai. She says, before I heard the news in the morning, the video I made for the aerobic dance competition has become an unforgettable memory. I wasn't dancing to mock or ridicule any organization or to be silly. I was dancing for a fitness dance competition. So she apparently had no idea and apparently has been doing dances like that in that exact spot for months and just happened to do it as armed officials were coming in to institute the coup that struck Myanmar recently. Let me catch people up and then we'll comment. Myanmar is under military rule following Monday's coup, in which the military detained de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and declared a year-long state of emergency. They claim that her party won last November's election because of fraud. We have some more updates there, but JR, what do you think about that?
I don't know. If you have more updates, that's better. But the thing is, it looks like she's standing in the middle of a huge street because automobiles are flying around behind her. But this has been her spot to do her dance for a while with a full setup. Now, this looks like in front of a building. Okay, I see the posts now. I was trying to figure out how she sets up her this rug in the middle of the street. But yes, now I see it makes more sense now. Because I was like, well, you might expect at some point to see some automobiles flying around behind you if you're doing your TikToks here. I'm sorry, it's not a TikTok.
It's not a TikTok. I mean, maybe it's on TikTok. I have no idea. I barely know about TikTok. Although the dance report is on TikTok now, so you can go check us out there. But anyway, yeah. And it was just, like, I know that it's like it was just purely accidental, but it sort of seemed perfect. Like it seemed like this really like sort of strong thing to lend attention to what's going on. It is just accidental. But anyway, since then, in terms of other viral stuff that's going on the internet, Facebook has designated Myanmar a temporary high-risk location after the coup and says it will remove any calls to bring armaments and protect posts criticizing the country's military. BuzzFeed reports that Facebook's Asia Pacific policy director Raphael Frankel said Facebook is securing the accounts of activists and journalists as well as protecting critical information about what's happening on the ground. And I point that out because Facebook's involvement in geopolitical situations like this in the past has often been incredibly deferential to authoritarians and to military governments. So maybe, especially with more international attention on this one, they're going to do better. But we're going to have to watch. And obviously, this is a situation that is developing rapidly. There was going to be condemnation, and China blocked it in the UN. So a lot has been going on in this area.
It's such an illustration of the state of the world, right? You have a very important, very serious situation is happening in the background, but in the foreground, dancing is happening. And if you ask 100, if you poll 100 people, 90% might say, I'm more interested in what's going on in the foreground.
Unfortunately. Just,
and honestly, based off the news or even the situation of each one of those situations, most people are probably interested in watching what she's doing rather than what's going on in the background. It's just the state of where we are in the world.
Yeah. And now I wish, this is the stupidest, shallowest wish, I wish that that had been against a green screen so that we could put her over other historic events as they're going on, sort of like a contemporary Forrest Gump type situation. Anyway.
Don't give the internet any ideas because it will happen.
That's true. Parker Malloy probably already has it. Anyway, that's Meanwhile, and thank you for joining us for our international news roundup. And JR, thank you for joining us for all of the big news Wednesday. We're going to be staying tuned to see if something truly epic happens on this Wednesday, maybe involving Marjorie Greene. We're going to have to see.
Oh, I hope both. Okay, we'll see, but hopefully we'll wait till next Wednesday for
Maybe. I am very excited to be able to welcome to the program today, speaker, professor, and author of Ida Be the Queen, Michelle Duster. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me, John.
Glad to have you here. So we can show everyone the book, which came out just last week. And I would love to hear more about the life of her, your own familial connection. So tell me about the process of launching into the writing of this book.
Right. So my book, Ida B. the Queen, is about the life and legacy of my great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells. She was a journalist, a civil rights activist, a suffragist. She was one of the founders of the NAACP, the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs, the Negro Fellowship League. Her resume is awe-inspiring. And on top of all of that, she was a wife and mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her life was absolutely fascinating. She did amazing, courageous work at constant threat to her own life. And obviously, there have been books written about her. I'm telling you, but she worked on her own autobiography. She's been immortalized in film and all of that. But you obviously have a connection, being that you are descendant from her. How does that affect the writing of a book about her?
Well, in writing Ida B. the Queen, I could reflect on my own experience growing up in the family where I knew my whole life that I was related to her. But I also wanted to help people understand how the work and legacy of my great-grandmother still makes a difference today. Some of the work that she was doing is still continuing with several movements and activists and politicians to this day.
Yeah, exactly. It's obviously there have been changes. It is perhaps somewhat depressing to reflect on some of the same struggles going on. Hypothetically, what do you think she would think of the current state of things and what's still being fought over?
Well, hypothetically, I think my great grandmother that I wrote about in Ida B. the Queen would have a mixed feelings about what's happening today. I'm sure she would be thrilled to see Kamala Harris inaugurated and elected and inaugurated into the vice presidential position, to see the 117th Congress with so many women elected. But then at the same time, we're still dealing with some racial and social problems that need to be solved.
Definitely. When you were doing, as you mentioned, you grew up knowing that you're related to her. Obviously, you must have done a lot of research for the writing for this. What were you most surprised by in your research into her life?
When I was researching for Ida B. the Queen, what I was most surprised about, I shouldn't have been surprised, but I still was, that she was surveilled by the FBI. She was controversial during her time, and to see in black and white in print that she was considered dangerous to the point where she needed to be watched by the United States government, that was a little surprising. And it sort of reiterated to me how powerful she really was.
Yeah, I guess, you know, considering many of the prominent African-American activists and pastors and political leaders who were investigated, I guess on some level, it's not perhaps that surprising, but she was doing journalistic work on lynchings and trying to like pursue justice. The idea that she would be considered some sort of threat individually seems like very perverse looking back on that time and all that she tried to accomplish. That she was fighting for women's right to vote. What is so inherently dangerous about that?
Well, my great grandmother Ida B. Wells, and I wrote about this in Ida B. the Queen. The reason that the Secret Service, she called them Secret Service, they were FBI agents, came to her place of work was because she was protesting the United States government from killing their own soldiers during World War I. So they considered her to be criticizing the government during the war. And that's why they consider her to be dangerous.
Wow. Well, obviously, you know, anyone reading the book is going to learn a lot about her. And as you said, much of her work and her legacy is still very applicable today. If there was one lesson that a modern population, perhaps who isn't taught as much in school about her as they perhaps should be, what lesson would you want people to draw from her life and experience?
One lesson that I would like people to know that I wrote about in Ida B. the Queen is how one person can make a difference. And they can use journalism as a form of activism. They can use truth telling and challenge the power structure. They can organize. And there are a myriad of ways that she used to affect change and make a difference when it comes to laws and policies.
Exactly. So much so that very justifiably people should be learning about her life, getting on towards a century later. The book is Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. Michelle Duster, thank you so much for revealing the history of your family and for joining us on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.